In the late 1800s, U.S. postal workers and the public fell in love with a pup from upstate New York. This episode of Footnoting History is all about the adored dog named Oney. Hey everyone, Christine here. As you just heard, today we're going to talk about Oney, the most popular and beloved dog in the history of the U.S. Postal Service. If you were here with me in January for the Mignonette episode, I fully admit that was a very, very dark topic. This one, while you'll see it was inspired by the same trip that sparked that topic, is much lighter and sweeter, I promise. I first learned of Oney's existence when I was in Washington, D.C. last December. I paid a visit to the Smithsonian's National Postal Museum, which is fabulous, by the way, and came across a statue of a dog on the landing near the escalator. The statue was of a diminutive pup wearing a much-adorned harness. Its placard read, "Oney, mascot of the U.S. Postal Service, bronze sculpture by Daniel C. Brown." Then, I learned Oney had his own display. Of course, I was intrigued, and by the time I left the museum that day, I knew Oney would be given the footnoting history treatment. However, before we jump in, I want to remind you all that a captioned version of this episode can be found on footnotinghistory.com and youtube.com/footnotinghistory. I must, of course, tip my hat to the Smithsonian because, exactly as you'd expect, most of the information out there on Oney comes from them. You can find a listing of many of the sources used for this episode on footnotinghistory.com. And, as always, thank you to everyone who buys our merch and supports us through Patreon. You are the absolute best. Now then, let's get to Oney, because if there's one thing I know, it's that people love dog stories, and who am I to keep you from one any longer? In 1888, the dog we know as Oney found his way into the post office in Albany, New York. For a time, it was the common tale that Oney was a stray pup who wandered in on his own. However, in the last decade or so, it has become accepted that Oney probably belonged to a postal clerk who allowed the dog to walk to work with him. Although Oney's owner eventually abandoned him there, or hey, maybe Oney wanted to stay, he was never kicked out. Regardless of how he ended up ownerless in the Albany post office, the fact remains that he became a much-beloved darling to the employees, and pictures of Oney make it easy to understand why. Although no one knew his exact age or what exactly made up his breed lineage, he was almost certainly part terrier, though. To me, Oney was adorable. He was small, with white dominating his underbelly, front legs, and around the snout, while the rest of his body was varying shades of brown. In most photographs, he looks plaintive and shaggy in that kind of way that makes you want to give him a snuggle. As for his name, even that has a questionable history. One possible explanation is that it was given to him by the clerk who originally led him to the post office. Another is that Oney received his name as the result of people regularly asking him, "Who owns you?" Oney became, essentially, every clerk's dog. They embraced him as one of their own and loved him. Meanwhile, Oney, well, he really loved mail, and in particular, mail bags. He slept on them, he guarded them, and he followed them wherever they went, even if that meant leaving the post office. It was his love of following the mail that turned Oney into a traveler who would capture widespread attention. Since Oney's main interest was following his beloved mail bags wherever they were headed, this often meant leaving Albany. In this period, mail made its way around the country mostly by train. As such, Oney began riding the mail trains regularly, going wherever the mood struck him, on both short trips, like from Albany to New York City, and increasingly long ones. It might not have been all joy riding, though, if he was unlucky. The folks who worked on those trains knew it was a dangerous job. There was always a risk of being robbed or in some sort of horrible accident, and tragedy was more common than you'd like to think. The National Archives reports that from 1877 to 1896, quote, 94 clerks were killed in the line of duty, and 821 were seriously injured on the job through derailments, falls, drownings, fires, and other work-related accidents. The robberies are part of that other work-related accidents category. Oney, however, was not worried about such things. He seems to have loved travel and the postal workers who rode on these trains. For many, his presence was like that of a guardian angel, because there are no records of any form of major incident occurring when he was present on a train. One of the most interesting things to me about Oni's travels is that people always took care of him. This was helped, certainly, by the fact that the postal clerks from the Albany Post Office provided him with a collar that declared his daemon home. Oni guarded the mail, he guarded the postal workers, and he was a welcome sight for people far and wide as his reputation began to grow. It grew so much that two things happened. Newspapers took note, and people started to give him souvenirs. Reading newspaper articles about Oni can be downright delightful. He's often given far more space than you'd think. This is perhaps a tribute to the concept of dogs being a human's best friend. Everyone seemed to have an interest in his comings and goings. Stories about him became heartwarming page fillers. For example, one typical write-up of Oni's exploits can be found in the April 9, 1893 edition of the Omaha Daily Bee from Nebraska. The headline is incredibly respectful, calling our hero Mr. Oni and telling us that the noted canine tourist paid a visit to Omaha yesterday. It goes on to call Oni, quote, one of the most distinguished travelers and unique individuals in the United States, but also to let us know that, quote, he is not a handsome dog by any means, but is of a philosophic, happy disposition. On this trip, Oni apparently inspected the Omaha post office as if he was an official, devoured the food provided by the local clerks, and abandoned Omaha in favor of heading for the Black Hills after only one night in the city. It's easy to see how people would find this sort of article a charming break from real life's troubles. Another fun article dates to February 7, 1895, and appeared in the Marble Hill Press out of Missouri. This article was called A Dog on the Road, and it let readers know that Oni was following his apparently customary practice of traveling the postal railroads in the southern states during the cold, wintry months up north. It tells us, with an amusingly authoritative tone, that, quote, it is Oni's present intention not to return to brave the rigors of northern climate before June. And further, that he, quote, has the postal car habit so thoroughly developed that he can rest in no other places, and sleep only comes to his tired eyes when he lies curled up on a mail sack. Accompanying the article is an illustration of a very shaggy Oni for extra cute points. As for the souvenirs, those usually took the form of tags, most likely made of metal. Over the course of the near decade he traveled, Oni amassed hundreds of these tags, maybe even 1,000. Initially, the tags were attached to his collar, but, as you can imagine, that began to weigh him down. Thankfully, Postmaster General John Wanamaker had a plan. When he learned about all the tags being given to Oni, he provided an alternative method for Oni to carry them. A harness that allowed for the tags to be more evenly distributed over the trunk of Oni's body and relieve him of aches and pains. Additionally, whenever a postal worker noticed that the harness was getting too full, they would remove some of the tags and send them back to Albany or, in some cases, Washington, D.C. The result of this is that the Smithsonian has a massive collection of Oni's tags. I chose some to feature on the blog post for this entry. So if you want to see them, definitely head over to footnotinghistory.com while you listen. The tags come from all sorts of places and events. Some were special and personalized, featuring Oni's name and the date of his visit to a particular location, while some were a little less exciting, doing things like advertising for a company. Some of my favorites among his collection include the following. A horseshoe-shaped tag that said, presented to His Dogship by F.M. Parker, marking the date as April 20, 1892, and indicating its connection to the Baltimore and Grafton Railway Post Office. An advertisement tag that said, presented to Oni by Ketchum's Pharmacy, Lawrence, Massachusetts, April 25, 1896. An undated tag in the shape of a Maltese cross, with Oni's name emblazoned across the middle, given to the pup by a postmarking and stamping company. A rectangular tag that said, be good to Oni, presented to the dog by the postal clerks from Rock Island, Illinois in 1895. I also chose two tags that had ties to the dog-loving community. One, from the Southern California Kennel Club, was presented to Oni in April of 1893 and called him Special for Best Traveling Dog. Not to be outdone, the Butterfly Bench Show of Grand Rapids, Michigan gave Oni a similar tag that said, awarded to Oni, the Globetrotter, December 8th to 11th, 1896. You don't need to be a historian of material culture, that is, physical items, to appreciate how every tag tells a story. And these tags are a literal bounty of information about who knew who Oni was, who paid attention to where he traveled, and who wanted to either pay tribute to him or promote themselves through connections with the famous beloved wandering dog. While the majority of Oni's life was spent crossing the continental United States and dipping into Canada on rail trains, his most remarkable trip was one around the world. Now, don't think that this was something Oni decided to do of his own accord. While generally speaking, he wandered wherever his heart desired, his globe-trotting adventure in 1895 was carefully orchestrated, likely inspired in part by Jules Verne's Around the World in 80 Days, and the Tacoma, Washington started and ended worldwide travels of businessman George Francis Train. A collection of businessmen from Tacoma worked with the postal clerks who loved Oni to launch a publicity stunt where the dog was shepherded around the globe. It took him and the clerks that accompanied him just over 4 months, but he managed to visit places like Japan, Singapore, Shanghai, and Algiers. Newspaper coverage by the Roanoke Daily Times noted that in Japan, he was given a passport that allowed him to travel freely in the country, and that when he made a stop in Hong Kong, he visited the consulate and many shops and merchants, with some people adding small pieces of money to his collar. It is believed that hundreds of people turned out to see him on his grand return. He was truly a pup of public interest. All glorious adventures, however, must come to an end. And Oni's time as a traveling dog couldn't last forever. By 1897, all the hustling and bustling around took its toll on him. He was getting up there in age, though again, no one knew exactly what his age was, and he stopped traveling regularly, even taking respite with a postal worker in Missouri. His disappearance from the rails did not go unnoticed. Rumors swirled, and some newspaper articles claimed that he'd been shot for attempting to bite someone. It was deemed newsworthy enough that, on May 2nd, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer published a 3-column article titled Oni is Not Dead. It assured people that he was living in retirement in Missouri, but also chronicled his importance to the railway postal workers. It said that he could always tell a postal worker from another kind of human, shared stories about his travels around the world, commented on his change in disposition with age, and proposed that the pinnacle of his fame was when he was given the freedom of San Francisco by the mayor. However, Oni wasn't fully down and out yet. He still occasionally traveled, but unfortunately, one of his trips would be his undoing. In June of that year, he was in Toledo, Ohio, doing what he always did, following the mailbags and being appreciated by those he encountered. Oni's advanced age and changed temperament caused him to be less friendly than he used to be, especially when it came to having his tags admired. So it came to be that, in Toledo, he bit a postal clerk, identified in multiple newspapers as Clerk Blankertz. This turn of events proved fatal for Oni. The postmaster declared that Oni was a danger, called for the local sheriff, and had the dog put down quickly. It is perhaps not surprising that newspapers around the country carried this news. The Houston Daily Post declared that, quote, his years of travel all over the United States and around the world have made him the most famous dog of his time, while other papers carried similar sentiments. Oni's death was a gut punch to the postal workers who loved him. He'd been their friend and companion for nearly a decade. He was, for all intents and purposes, the pet of railway postal workers across the country, as well as their unofficial mascot. Mail clerks didn't want Oni to be forgotten, so they contributed to a fund to preserve him through taxidermy. Oni was given the full preservation treatment, then put on display in a place of honor at the Washington, D.C. headquarters of the U.S. Postal Department. He largely remained there until the 1910s when he was transferred to the Smithsonian Institution, and when the National Postal Museum opened in 1993, Oni was part of the collection. In fact, Oni still remains embedded into the history and identity of the U.S. Postal Service. In 2011, Oni had a popularity renaissance. As part of it, he underwent a spa treatment of sorts. Taxidermist Paul Reimer was tasked with performing a restoration of the little guy. According to Smithsonian Features by Aaron Blasco and M.J. Meredith, the restoration included several steps. First, he was washed in order to remove all the dust he'd amassed, as well as to take off remnants of paint and even arsenic that had once been used as preservatives. Once this was completed, his fur, which had gotten to look rather matted, was all fluffed up again. Missing hair would be replaced, would also have to be dyed to match Oni's natural colors. Then, the preserved version of Oni was compared with historical images, and changes were made with a new cast to alter the structure of his face. This gave him more of an expressive look and made his snout more prominent. Finally, at this point, Oni was not only wearing his famous harness, but also a jacket. The jacket was removed but preserved separately. As for what's inside Oni, Reimer explained, quote, Oni is literally stuffed with excelsior. Excelsior is like straw, but made from shaved wood. It was once widely used as a packing material. Oni's rejuvenated self was returned to display as part of a new exhibition unveiled that year, and while he was away, a so-called phony Oni had taken his place. But a refresh and a new exhibition wasn't all that happened that year. It was also the year Oni got his own forever stamp. For folks outside of the United States, a forever stamp means that once you buy it, no matter how much the price of stamps changes, you can still use it. The Oni stamp showed an illustrated close-up of his face in profile, with his name proudly emblazoned on his collar, and a background made up of his various collected tags. That year even contained an Oni look-alike contest that searched the whole country for its winner, which ended up being a roughly 4 or 5-year-old terrier mix from California named Bentley. Oni continues to be a mascot for the National Postal Museum, with the occasional event like the Dog Days of Summer Family Festival held to share his story, in conjunction with an animal adoption fair. Of course, he's still on display, which is again how I learned about him. And if you visit the National Postal Museum website, you'll see an animation of him asking you if you want to sign up for their newsletter. He may have passed away well over a century ago, but he is certainly not forgotten. In fact, I'd argue he's something of a patron saint for postal workers and postal history lovers to this day. And certainly everyone knows he was a very good boy. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Footnoting History. To listen to more of our episodes about dogs, visit footnotinghistory.com/dog-history, or look for the Dog History playlist on our YouTube channel. I hope you'll continue to join us for more episodes to come, and always remember, the best stories are in the footnotes.